fascinated me. I love it. But it puzzles me as well. And even though it sounds strictly old time, there are elements of everything from punk to white gospel in the songs and in their attitude. I've been talking to Gil and David since 1996 when I interviewed them when they played the Dark Club in Dublin. And most of tonight's programme is based around an interview for the Harrow and the Harvest tour at the Grand Canal Theatre in November. And some of it's from an interview for the Midland Festival down in Mullingar. One of the best ways to understand where Gillian comes from is to listen to her autobiographical song, No One Knows My Name, from the album Soul Journey. Gillian Welch was adopted at birth. Her mother was a young Southern college student, her father a travelling musician. She was adopted by two songwriters who decamped to Hollywood to do the music for the Carol Burnett Show. She was brought up, obviously, in a very musical atmosphere. She learned to play guitar fairly young, singer-songwriter circles. She had the Woody Guthrie songbook, the Carter Family songbook. She was such an exceptional student that, in fact, there was a documentary which focused on her about the high school student who could accomplish everything. She went off to UC, University of California, San Jose, to study photography. And one day, when she was scrubbing the bathtub in a shared flat, she first heard the Stanley Brothers.
I know, yes, I was, truly. Dropped the sponge, ran in. What is that?
I think she'd just be, maybe you'd sound more like Richard Thompson.
I'd probably sound more like James Taylor or Paul Simon or...
Okay, Paul Simon.
You know, because I was very deep into the singer-songwriter thing. I just hadn't found... It's the slightly more, you know, classical, slightly boiled down aspect that really, really hit me so hard, so appealed to me, you know.
Well, and you knew all the songs already from being a kid and singing them.
Yeah, so. I'd grown up singing the folk songs, you know.
Can't you just hear the influences in that? After her bathtub epiphany with the Stanley Brothers, Gillian finished her degree in photography, but decided that really music was where she had to go, and she went off to the Berklee College of Music in Boston, where she met David Rawlings at an audition for the only bluegrass band in the college. David's from Rhode Island, and even though Rhode Island is a tiny state, he's from the backwoods of Rhode Island, what they call a swamp Yankee, same as me. He was studying guitar, loved country music, but didn't know what to do about it, kind of. They got together, and it was a musical marriage made in heaven. After finishing up at Berklee, they both headed to Nashville, wrote songs, and tried very hard not to have a day job. Did you want to be songwriters, or did you want to be performers?
I wanted to be a performer.
Okay.
But I... wanted to be a singer-songwriter. So I had it in my head that the way, like, first you needed songs.
Okay,
so,
logic.
You know, I moved to Nashville. Dave moved to Nashville. I'm concentrating on writing songs. And one of the great things about Nashville is it is a song town. And I needed money, and I didn't want to work a job.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the time, because there are only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
And I've always been a fairly methodical, fairly slow writer. So I went looking for a publishing deal to be subsidized.
Okay.
You know, to get some money to be a songwriter. And a wonderful man named David Conrad signed me. He's the first guy who ever gave me a job in the music industry.
And he worked for Elmo Irving, the publishing branch of what used to be the old A&M Records, Jerry Moss and Herb Alpert's label.
Yeah.
And Elmo Irving, that connection is why, that's how Gillian ended up getting heard by Jerry Moss, who was Elmo Sound.
David then sends a tape label to Jerry Moss and says, I just signed this girl to a writing deal. You should check her out. And he sends the tape to Jerry, and then Jerry...
just happens to be about to start a new label.
Is about to start a new label. He was forbidden. to start a label after he got out of A&M,
for a certain amount of time. Yeah.
And then he and Herb Alpert were ready to start a little label again. And so he was just starting to look for acts, and so I flew out to both of my deals. It's so funny in this day and age, but you know, Dave and I really are, in a way, on the tail end of old school record industry.
Yeah.
Both of my deals I got by going into the guy's office with my guitar and sitting in front of his desk and playing songs on
my
guitar.
You did a Tammy Wynette.
Yeah, I did the thing where you walk into the guy's office with your guitar and you sit in front of his desk and you play for him.
Yeah, and David Conrad, who was from North Carolina but had moved to Nashville as a protege of Chet Atkins, Chet had heard him play. Chet would have, like, local kids who were very talented, prodigies or whatever, sometimes up at his shows and let them play a little bit with him. And I think David was one of these kids.
Okay.
And he'd moved to Nashville and was a very good guitar player, but then had sort of drifted into the business side of things. And, like, one day after you'd been signed, not long after you'd been signed, he said, oh, we should, I'll take you guys over, you can play for Chet, you know? And so we get set down in Chet's, you know, in his house. He has this
great little
room with an office. And obviously Chet was he had a great sense of humor. He was a funny guy. He had little knickknacks around his office, including like something someone had given him called a folk singer's guitar. And it was just a guitar body, but then the neck only had like the first, it was this long, it only had 3 frets on it because that's all that folk singers need. but so in the midst of this, we go in and sit down and play, you know, Orphan Girl or something for Chet. I'm taking a little guitar solo. Oh,
yeah.
Gil actually used to take a guitar solo when we played Orphan Girl.
We did.
And so she's taking a guitar solo.
There's 2 solos in Orphan Girl, and I used to take one of them, and I would just play the melody, kind of Mother Maybelle Carter style. I would just play the melody. And we're playing, I think I used to take the second solo. And we're playing, and I'm singing, and all of a sudden, I realize I'm about to take a guitar solo for Chet Atkins. And oh my God, I about died. But he was lovely.
And their second album, Hell Among the Yearlings, David said was actually quite difficult to make.
Hell Among the Yearlings was a difficult record to make. And
well, it was the first one you'd done completely on your own.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
We did. That was produced by T-Bone. But he had sort of left during the process. And
I always consider that your album.
Oh, that's funny.
Revelator is the one where we're really left to our own devices.
Well, that we just make on our own.
Truly.
But so there's a few tracks on the end of it. Just, you know, Hell, we weren't given a lot of time to write before it. We were still on the major-ish label.
Yeah.
And so there was some pressure just to get it out. And we did some recording truly at the last, we did some, the day before the record was mastered, which is the end of all.
End of the musical process.
Things.
That's the end.
We recorded
of, you know,
2 songs at the house.
And FedExed them out.
To the mastering engineer. We'd already sent the lyrics and they were barely, we wrote them, sent the lyrics before we recorded them. Recorded them, edited, FedExed them, and put them on a plane.
Tell me what they were.
It's Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
And Miner's Refrain. And neither of those existed before that.
So no one at our record label, nor our producer T-Bone,
heard them.
Honey Now was also recorded at our house.
Yeah.
But T-Bone had heard that. We brought that into the session as a demo, and
T-Bone
loved it and just wanted to use it.
I have a query, a very curious query, which is dates to, I think, songs from around this time. You've written songs other people have covered, and you've never recorded them?
True.
There's a few of those.
Dry Town?
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember the name of the one Trisha Yearwood covered.
Trisha did
2 days from Knowing.
2 days from Knowing.
Yeah, and
which
then
was a B-side.
Then
her.
There's Wichita, which
Wichita's a very good song.
It's a great song.
There's Wichita. There's 455 Rocket.
Yes.
There's New Favorite.
Kathy
that
there's
Alison
New
Crouch
Favorite
did.
That Alison Krauss.
Are you
did.
Ever going to?
There's
them?
Versions.
The demos exist somewhere.
Yeah, like,
because all those people had to learn the song. Mm-hmm. They learned it from versions that we had recorded.
I mean, some of the songs that you mentioned, just from a, you know, there's like a song like Wichita, that was cut for the first record and didn't really fit in. It was cut for the second record and was one of the things that got bumped at the last second, I'm pretty sure. Because it just was too sunny for that record.
It is,
in its way.
Even though it's a heartbreak song, it's a sunny heartbreak
song.
And
I think we tried to cut it for Revelator briefly.
Mm-hmm.
The sad thing is, I now, again, putting on my hat, my
producer hat.
I'm really disappointed that it didn't occur to me to cut it for Soul Journey, because I think that's the record it would
fit
on.
Yeah.
And we were in the middle of another thing and we just forgot about it.
It was just in hindsight, we're like, oh.
Now, each time in the past few years that I have interviewed Gil and David, I've asked them a question about, are you ever going to do a live album? I would love to have one, and I think most people would as well. And each time, David has put us off, qualified. This is just quintessential David Rawlings.
I've thought about it. Dave, have you thought about it?
Sure, yeah. We haven't done it, though.
But you record most of your gigs, don't you? Or do you
know? We have a fair number of the shows recorded. Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know that they're of a quality that you would necessarily...
You're a perfectionist.
...release. But, no, I don't mean the performances so much as I mean the recordings.
You know, the hard thing with a live record also is...
I know you're a perfectionist.
Well,
David Rawlings.
They are something different. They're not a live performance either. They're a recording of a live performance. When you listen to a live record, it's not the same experience as being there.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I recognize that there is something different about our live performance than our studio performance. I describe it as slightly more extroverted. I hear it as slightly more muscular.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the studio, we are more internal. But I recognize that people have a different experience of the music.